What's up, everyone? My name's Nick.
And I'm Mem.
And welcome into the Ominous Archives. All right, guys. Well, we got nothing this week. I don't have anything, nothing new. Work's working. Weather's doing its thing.
Life's lifing.
I mean, I will be at a wedding when this is this comes out.
That's fun.
So yeah, everybody enjoy. I will be enjoying my sister-in-law's wedding.
Yeah, congrats.
Yeah, but I guess we're just gonna dive right into episode 26.
What you got for me today?
So we're gonna be talking about the iconic Stanley Hotel.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be such a fun one.
It's going to be fun.
Okay.
Buckle up.
I didn't expect it to be one I, like, knew a little bit about either.
Well, the big question is, have you read The Shining and have you seen
Oh, I have not
movie?
Read it. I've seen the important parts of the movie. I have not seen the whole thing.
The important
I'd be
parts.
Lying if I said... But you know what I mean? Like, with an iconic movie like that, like, you see scenes.
That's like
me saying... Like, I've 1,010% seen scenes.
That's like me saying, I watched Ready Player One and there's... A Shining scene in there, so okay. I kind of seen the important scene.
No, that's not what I mean. I know the plot.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen... I know enough.
Okay. Well...
I'm excited. Enough to be excited about this episode.
Oh, good. Look, Em's excited. Archie's excited. He's got his ball that does not squeak.
Everybody clap, please.
Woo! Wait, I don't know which one's the applause button.
He's not even going to try.
I didn't practice with the buttons, so we're not even going to go for it. But the Stanley Hotel... is nestled in the mountain town of Estes Park, Colorado. And let me say, that I practiced that probably 20 minutes.
Yeah, I feel like I heard that name 50 times. So.
I know. I felt like I needed to get it right. I don't even know if I got it right, but we're going to go with it. Estes Park. It's a place famous for its grandeur and inspiration of horror legends like The Shining by Stephen King. Plus, it's... numerous hauntings. So get ready. We're checking in and maybe we'll check out. We're not too sure.
Not maybe. We're checking out.
Are you sure?
I would hope so.
You never know. I mean,
honestly. All right, give me the rundown. I'm excited.
We used to get kind of crazy when we did the cursed
hotel. True.
The cursed place.
This is
that
true.
Next week was wild.
That's why I feel like I can't do a cursed place for a while. I feel like I got to spread those out.
Exactly. Well, we may not check out, so. Mm-hmm. We're here, but somehow we're spiritually there. So, the Stanley Hotel owes its existence to one man, Freeland Oscar Stanley.
I'm so shocked his last name is Stanley.
Are you?
Yes.
You look shocked.
How crazy would it be if his name didn't have Stanley in it? Like, of course, it's called the Stanley Hotel. I feel like every single time we talk about a place that is, like, named after...
Oh, yeah.
Like,
if somebody built the building,
the builder of the building,
them.
That is what it's called.
Yep. That's how it goes.
It's like, I mean, yeah, it's
like
common
in the
sense.
Builder book.
It's in the Builder book.
He was born in Kingfield, Maine. And fun fact about Kingfield, Maine, it's the same birthplace as Stephen King.
That's a weird coincidence.
It's a very weird coincidence. So F.O. was an... Well, they called him F.O. for anybody who doesn't know.
I was going to say, you guys are on a nickname basis now. Huh?
Everybody probably knows. They call him F.O. Stanley.
Okay.
He was an inventor and a brilliant one at that. You might recognize the name from Stanley Steamer Automobile.
Like, Stanley Steamer.
Carpet clean. I don't know.
Are we going to get copyrighted for
linked.
That? No,
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, you started it.
I did.
I don't know.
Interesting.
It was a steam-powered car of the early 1900s.
Okay.
Before that, though, he, along with his twin brother, F. E. Stanley, created a machine that traveled through time.
Get the hell out of here. They time traveled?
No.
Yeah, right.
No. It actually coated dry photographic plates
okay.
in a type of gelatin, like a gelatin emulsion.
Okay.
Which... sped the process up of, like, photos being developed. I just knocked my mic
across the room. Oh, that's kind of sick.
Yeah.
Which is, like, such a crazy concept.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about the amount of work that went into that shit, and we could just, like, take a photo on our phones. And, like,
yeah, now we take a photo on our phone, and they came up with some gelatin that you spread on film
to develop your pictures. Yep.
So they ended up selling that to George Eastman, the founder of Kodak in 1903. But Stanley wasn't just a brilliant inventor. He was also a tuberculosis survivor.
Hell,
I feel like it was a thing back then.
Yeah,
like,
seriously, everybody.
TB was a big thing back then. In 1903, Stanley was diagnosed with what was then the deadly illness.
Yeah.
And doctors kind of were just like, meh.
Yeah.
We're going to give you about a year. So he took their medical advice, and he and his wife, Flora, they decided to travel west to Colorado in search of the healing air, which I totally believe, like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, you might be like, oh, healing air, like air quotes or whatever, but
no,
I definitely
I've
think
heard
the...
some stories, like the altitude and stuff, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's just different there.
It's definitely... There's definitely something to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, this was a popular solution for people suffering from tuberculosis at this time. So they all kind of visited the Rocky Mountains in droves. The land on which the Stanley Hotel sits is said to have, like, a healing quality. Now, there's apparently a lot of limestone and running water around the Stanley, which is kind of like a big magnet for, like, energy and stuff like that. So, keep that in mind. The crisp, dry climate of Estes... Oh, boy. There we go. There's the mess up. Estes Park worked wonders with an elevation of 7,500 feet above sea level. Stanley regained his health, and in his gratitude, he set out to build something lasting in the town that saved his life. The Stanley Hotel became a sanctuary, serving as both a healing spa for those suffering from illness, as well as a resort for Colorado's elite society.
I don't think I've ever actually seen a picture of what it looks like.
It is.
It's bigger than I thought it was.
Yep.
Interesting.
Super... I think
Gosh, the mountains behind it are so pretty.
The mountains behind everything, like anything. I feel like if you take a picture in Colorado, you just have mountains behind it.
Oh, I feel like Colorado would 100% be a place that I would like to live.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go out there at some point.
Very pretty.
I haven't made
there.
It yet, but I'm going out there.
Yeah, it's a very pretty hotel.
Mm-hmm.
At least from the outside.
Yeah.
You haven't told me much of the, you know.
It's haunted inside.
I'm sure.
So... It all begins in 1909 when the Stanley Hotel officially opens. Unlike other rustic mountain lodges at the time, the Stanley Hotel was a model of modernity. It had electricity, telephones, indoor plumbing, and a fleet of Stanley steamers cars.
Period.
Not the carpet ones.
Not the carpet.
To transport their guests in style. Now, the electricity, I'm pretty sure Stanley is the one who... built like the hydroelectric dam or whatever hydroelectric thing to get electricity, but he didn't just do it for the hotel. He gave it to the whole town.
Right.
So that was kind of him doing his things. You'll hear, you may hear the little baby in the background. She's apparently having a great time upstairs. Flora Stanley was a refined pianist and added an air of sophistication with nightly recitals in the grand ballroom, and the hotel quickly attracted the upper-class East Coast vacationers looking for luxury in the wild. Now, I think it's also because Stanley missed, I believe it said, that he also kind of like missed some of his friends, if you can call them friends, back east. And he wanted to bring them out here, which was kind of also, like, the reason why he wanted to make it, like, high-end and stuff like that.
Right.
But it kind of started the whole glamp marble, sweeping staircases, and it's only an hour away from Denver.
Yeah.
So the Stanley was a symbol of refinement in the Rocky Mountains for years to come. Mm. Although the Stanleys had more positive experiences with owning the hotel... One negative occurrence foreshadowed a later disaster. Only a few weeks after the hotel's grand opening on July 7th, 1909, The way I said that makes it sound like it opened on July 7th. It opened, I believe, on July 4th,
1909. Got it.
On July 7th, the Limer County Independent reported that Mr. Stanley had fallen unconscious after being overcome by the fumes of a gasoline engine at the hotel when he was overseeing some machines that were being installed. Funny note about that. My cousin's one dog, we were riding our ATVs behind my grandmom's house, and my cousin pulled up, and the dog ran over and started, like, snapping at the exhaust.
Get the hell out of here.
To, like, bite the gas and knocked himself out.
It was, like, such a... Was he okay?
Yeah, he was fine. He literally, like, passed out, and, like, as soon as he, like, laid onto the ground, he just woke back up.
Woke himself back up.
What just happened?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'll never forget it. That's too much.
Yeah. It was so fast. He went over, and it was, like, two or three, like, hump, hump, and then out. I don't know.
It is ironic that a man whose livelihood was directly competing with gasoline engines literally went unconscious at his hotel.
Crazy.
From the fumes of gasoline.
Yeah.
Like, sir.
Yep.
The irony is actually insane.
Should have used steam engines to put the machines in.
Should have used steam engines.
Probably anything else, but... So I did do a little digging on that, too, because I was like, wouldn't he have, like, you smell the fumes.
Right.
So... I think it was 1883. Damn, I just looked it up. I think it was 1883 or no, 1936, I think, is when they started putting smell in the gas.
Oh, wow. It didn't have a smell before that?
Mm-mm. Nope, natural gas. Well, gas from the car.
Yeah.
You'd smell that because of the combustion and everything. But, like, natural gas, if, like, pumped into your house, you wouldn't smell it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Whose bright idea was that? A man's.
What, to put the...
To not put, just originally not put it in the
line. I don't think gas naturally has a smell.
Well, yeah, no, I know. But, like, they should have thought about that. It's like, how do you know you have a gas leak if you can't freaking smell it?
Yeah, well, there's this kind of crazy saying that hindsight's 20/20.
This is true.
Yeah, you know. So, while that incident was minor, it ended up foreshadowing something on a more terrifyingly grander scale, if you can catch my drift. Mm. For those who have listened to the podcast about the Stanley Hotel, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm.
For those who don't, hang in there. So, Stanley ended up selling the hotel in 1926. However, he briefly repurchased it 3 years later in 1929, only to resell it in 1930 at, like, the cusp of the Great Depression. Mm. I do know that... Stanley was, like, well off with money.
Right.
He really didn't have an issue with it. So, like, with the hotel not making profits, it didn't bother him because he had money. All the other owners, on the other hand, they needed it to make money. So, as time would wear on, the Stanley Hotel began to collect stories of not just glamorous parties and mountain vistas, but shadows that kind of... lingered a little too long.
Mm.
You know, you shut the light out and you're kind of like, why are you still there? Doors that would close with no reason. And music echoing from empty rooms. And by the 1970s, the hotel's splendor had begun to fade. And decades of wear, lack of care, limited investment kind of left this once beautiful grand structure. It just left it in a serious decline. And it probably would have been, like, destroyed if not for this one unexpected guest.
I wonder who.
I'm sure everybody's on the edge of their seats, like, who could this be?
Who could it be?
This could be anybody in the whole wide world.
Please.
Yeah. It was 1974, and author Stephen King checked into the Stanley Hotel.
No.
Wait, he didn't?
Stephen King. I'm kidding.
So he checked in, which was supposed to just be one night, and it was one night. He and his wife were the only guests staying at that time, because the hotel was preparing to close for the winter. So they didn't have, like, they were like a summer resort. They'd open for the summer, close for the winter,
because
Colorado gets crazy snow.
Yeah.
Especially back then. Now, the eerie quiet... The long, empty corridors and the thick atmosphere with isolation left a lasting impression. That single night was enough to inspire Stephen King's third novel and his first hardcover bestseller, The Shining. Though the film adaptation would go on to cement the hotel's eerie reputation in popular culture, it was that night King wandering the halls, standing in the dark, haunted ballroom that breathed a new life into the Stanley Hotel. The Shining remains a landmark masterpiece in a long and well-known list of King's novels, and it placed the Stanley squarely on the map for thrill seekers, horror fans, and paranormal investigators alike. Now, I know we have more on King's story. Just a minute. Just a little bit.
Yeah, because I have thoughts.
You have thoughts?
Well, I have a question.
She doesn't think much, guys.
I have a question, more so.
Oh, she has a question.
More so to say.
Well, today, the Stanley Hotel stands beautifully restored, a testament to its glory days when it served as a luxurious mountain retreat for the wealthy and well-connected. Yep. You need a secret password just to get a reservation.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not serious.
Oh.
But it said well-connected, so I thought it flowed.
I thought you were serious.
I'm just spitting lies.
He's actually lying about the Stanley Hotel.
We've talked about this earlier. The Alpine Rose in Philly. Mm-hmm. You have to, like, knock on the door, and they open the little thing.
Yeah.
Like, boop, and they have to give a
there's
password.
Also a, there's, like, an insomnia, like, speakeasy type thing in Philly that, like, they post a new password on their Instagram story every week, and you have to, like, know the Instagram, like, the password from the Instagram to get in.
Could you imagine just walking in and just cookies everywhere?
I think it's heaven, actually.
Well, I'm not a cookie person.
Really?
So,
oh, my God. Cookies are literally, like, my favorite,
like,
dessert.
I'm ice cream.
And cookies and ice cream are, like, mm-hmm. my two favorite.
Yeah, well, they're America's two favorite.
Yeah. All right, so, anyway, back to what we're doing.
Visitors can tour the historic halls and stay in its famously haunted rooms or indulge in modern comforts like fine dining, the lavish spa treatments, and curated anemones. I worked on that, hence why it says Finding Nemo, because I sat there for about 10 minutes going, anemones. Yeah, it was bad. Some say I don't pronunciate things well, and I'd agree. But ask anyone who spent the night, and they might tell you that not everything from the hotel's past stayed there.
Fork found in kitchen, like.
So now we're gonna get into the hauntings. You know, there's the history.
Before you talk about the Stephen King thing, did they film The Shining at?
Hold that thought.
Okay.
That was
my question.
Okay. Think about that, yeah.
Moving on.
So we'll dive right in back to the Stephen King thing. So Stephen King and his wife, they spent one eerie night at the Stanley Hotel in late September of 94, just before the property closed for the winter.
Not of 94, 74.
Thank you. 1974. I was just checking to make sure you're listening. Sometimes she doesn't listen to me and she
just... He just likes to make sure I'm paying attention.
Yeah. They were the only guests, and they were given room 217, now the most requested room in the hotel. We listened to a podcast earlier just to kind of, like, touch up and make sure, you know, all of our facts, all
right.
Not drive, but add some things, take some things away, whatever. And I should have looked at when this episode was recorded, but they said they went to try and book a stay in room 217, and at that time it was like 5:15 a night. To stay.
Dang.
And you had to book at least two nights.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the waiting list is probably, like, astronomical, I'm sure.
Couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah. That night, King had a nightmare in which he saw his young son being chased down the hotel's long, empty corridors by a possessed fire hose, which is now a reoccurring scene in the book.
Mm.
He awoke drenched in sweat, stepped out onto the balcony, lit a cigarette up, and by the time he stubbed out that cigarette, he had the bones of what will become his third novel and the first bestseller, The Shining. So, did you have your question?
I'm allowed to ask it now or no?
Oh, you were going to ask if it was filmed there. No, it was not filmed there.
Oh, okay.
It was not filmed. I'll get to it. Actually, it's a little later when we kind of get into the kind of breakdown of everything. Mm-hmm. But it was filmed at the Timberline Lodge.
Interesting.
And I'll double check that because for whatever reason, I don't feel like Timberline's right.
But I wonder why they didn't film it there.
You'd have to ask the director because even Stephen King's not crazy about it.
Oh, really?
Yes, he is quoted saying the movie is, don't hold me to this quote, yeah, but the movie is like a finely crafted Cadillac, mm-hmm, with no engine.
Okay.
Something like that.
Wasn't The Shining the one movie that like all that weird stuff happened like on set?
I don't know, haunted movies, all weird stuff.
Like a bunch of like weird stuff happened on set. Like they kept like, I don't know. I think it was that one.
Probably.
Proceed.
Room 217 itself carries a legacy of trauma. In the 1920s, a gas leak, ringing any bells, caused a massive explosion, destroying the floor above the main dining hall and nearly killing chambermaid Elizabeth Wilson. As she was blown one floor down, now she survived, and I thought I read somewhere she was in a coma for 2 years, and when she woke up, she ended up returning back to work.
Hmm.
She held her position until her death at the age of 90.
Oh my gosh, worked till 90?
Yep.
Girl?
They probably didn't have pensions or anything.
Yeah, seriously. You know?
Now, not long after her natural death, nothing crazy, guests began reporting supernatural activities tied to her presence. Unmarried couples claimed an invisible force separated them during the night, like they'd get this cold spot in between them.
Right.
While single male guests would wake up and find their bags mysteriously packed and placed outside the door. Apparently she thinks very small of bachelors. It's said that she's even folded some clothes for people who have stayed in the room. People, I guess, that she likes, which she's okay with, you know. But Room 217 isn't done just yet. Its haunting reputation is reinforced in the 1990s when actor Jim Carrey reportedly fled the room after only spending a few hours in the room during the filming of Dumb and Dumber out there.
What?
And he, I mean, I'm sure it's just never crossed his path, but he's never gone back.
Have you seen Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah.
That's so funny. I didn't know that it was filmed.
I didn't know it was filmed in Denver, but I'm also not, like, a movie buff like that, so. Now, it says he's never returned. I don't know if he's never returned on his own account, or if it's just one of those, like, he's just never gone back there to
stay. Just, like, happenstance.
He also, though, has never commented on this experience at all. So, Elizabeth may just not like him. Like, she was just like, you want to see scary? I'll show you scary. So, besides famous actors and Elizabeth being in there and everything, paranormal investigations have been done by the Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures, and they consider Room 217 to be one of the hotel's major hotspots. The Stanley Hotel was featured in two different episodes of Ghost Adventures, Season 4, Episode 5, and Season 5, Episode 5. They must have a thing about Season 5s. So, I guess I'll say it. We've already kind of said some things and stuff like that now, but this is kind of a spoiler. But
spoiler alert.
At the same time, I don't necessarily care because the movie and book have been out for so long. So it doesn't really matter. Sorry, I was scrolling all over and lost my place for a second. So in King's novel, Room 217, renumbered in Stanley Kubrick's film adaptation, also serve as the domain for one of the Overlook Hotel's most unsettling spirits, Mrs. Massey. Now, here's that fun fact you were asking about it being filmed.
Mm-hmm.
It was filmed in Oregon in the Timberline Lodge, and they actually asked for the room number to be changed from 217 to 237. Because they were afraid that it would scare the guests away from booking a haunted room. Wrong. Boy, did they airball that.
Yeah, seriously. Holy airball.
So, there's a little fun fact with that. Which is also why Stephen King's like, he's not crazy about it because they didn't film there. He actually went back and made a TV miniseries or something like that.
Oh, really?
Of, yeah, and I think it's Stephen King's The Shining is what it's called. And it's filmed at the Stanley. Miss Massey, a wealthy guest in the early 1970s, arrived with a teenage lover. So after a night of heavy drinking, the young man took off in her Porsche, never came back. Despite the hotel manager Ullman's offer to contact the police, Massey refused and drank herself into oblivion at the Colorado Lounge. Later that evening, she took a bottle of sleeping pills and died in the bathtub of room 217. Mm. In the novel and the film, she initially appears as a beautiful young woman. However, she later transforms into a repulsive, decaying old woman with loose, rotting flesh and a desire to keep you locked in the room with her.
I did not like that description.
It's like a forever hug.
Hated that.
I have a feeling we could have gotten way worse with the description.
I didn't like it.
Several characters, including Dolores Vickery, Dick Halloran, Danny Torrance, and Jack Torrance, have disturbing encounters with the ghost. Miss Massey exemplifies the hotel's legacy of death as Watson, the overlook's gruff maintenance man, remarks some 40 or 50 people have died here since it opened in 1910. Hmm. Now, the truth is opposite, in fact. Author and part-time paranormal investigator Richard Epstein confirms usually haunted locations have a history with lots of blood and death, but the Stanley doesn't have any of that. Hmm. He says that they want to know, like, people want to know how many deaths have occurred here. It's about as many as any other hotel, which isn't, like, crazy.
Right.
Nothing, like, substantial. Unless you're at, what's-his-face's? H.H. Holmes. Unless you're at his place. But that's true crime. That's not what we're doing. There were no suicides that were officially documented. So nobody really knows if there were.
Right.
So they say there's none. King's fictionalization of room 217 gave it life and an afterlife of its own. In fact, his nightmare about a possessed fire hose is eerily relevant to a real-life explosion and fire that occurred in the room so many years before. So it's almost kind of like he got the nightmare of that fire hose.
Yeah.
Correlating with the fact that there was that fire
right,
in that room.
Before.
I also find it really interesting and, like, destined that they stayed in 217.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The hotel was getting ready to shut down.
Yeah.
For the winter. They're the only guests. So any room's open, and it just so happens they get 217.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about destiny. Like, it was destined for him to get it to write the novel
right.
and for the hotel to get it to
give it the
to give it its life.
Yeah.
Now, of all the spirits that are said to linger, the historic Stanley Hotel, few have left as elegant of an impression as Flora Stanley, the wife of hotel founder F.O. Stanley. Now, Stanley himself is said to linger in the reception area or by the offices, just, you know, hanging around, making sure the hotel's...
I was going to say, he's got to make sure everything's still in check.
Yep, he's still making sure it's all running in its best way it can. While many guests come hoping to glimpse a shadowy figure in the halls or hear ghostly whispers in the dead of night, it's the soft, unmistakable notes of the piano music drifting from the music room long after the room is empty. That chills even the most skeptical visitor. I mean, who wouldn't be freaked out? Like,
right, like a phantom piano? Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine you're sitting there and you see the keys, like, getting pushed down. Like, that's terrifying. Absolutely.
You didn't
not.
Even let me finish.
Sorry.
Flora was an accomplished pianist and composer, and her love for music was matched only by her husband's devotion to her. Isn't that cute?
That's sweet.
In 1909, as part of the hotel's grand opening, Stanley purchased a 1906 Steinway grand piano specifically for Flora. It wasn't an ordinary instrument.
Do you know how expensive pianos are?
Super expensive.
Like, insane. Like,
yeah. This was rich with character, tone, and beauty. It became the centerpiece of concerts held at the Stanley Hotel, including performances by none other John Philip Sosa himself. Today, the room where the historic piano resides has been repurposed into the bar, but they left the alcove where Flora's Steinway still sits, overlooking the jagged silhouette of Long's Peak, remain unchanged. So guests and staff frequently report phantom music wafting through the air, particularly at night when the bar is closed and the room is empty. Some even claim to see the outline of a woman at the keys, her hands moving in a graceful silence over the ivories, playing melodies no living ear can hear or comprehend.
Nope.
And it seems that Miss Stanley isn't comfortable with just anyone playing her prized possession, as the piano cover has slammed down on many fingers attempting to play it.
Uh-uh. She said, nope. Uh-huh. No, you have to be worthy of playing my piano. Oh, get out of it. I love that.
Yep.
So I wonder if she would let me play it.
Are you a accomplished pianist?
I'm not an accomplished pianist, but I can play a little sum.
A little sum sum?
Play a little sum sum.
I can hit a key.
I can play that, Can You Feel the Love Tonight from The Lion King.
Can you?
I can.
That's impressive. I did not know that.
It's so random. It's like that one. So I literally took piano lessons when I was a kid for like 2 months, and that was like the only song I learned.
M was supposed to win us an Emmy.
I was supposed to win us an Emmy. I'm sorry. I don't think that's coming.
Maybe we'll win something for this podcast one day. Maybe.
There you go.
It could go anyway. World's greatest, world's worst. Who knows? We still win. Still's a W. Either way.
Any press is good press.
Any, exactly. So let's move on to the fourth floor now.
Oh, the fourth floor.
This is said to be the most haunted floor. So now, on to the fourth floor, which is said to be the most active, or I guess haunted floor. Not that anything's really happened on the fourth floor. It's just the most active one. So it holds perhaps the most playful spiritual energy within its historic walls. It was once a vast cavernous attic more than a century ago. Then it was converted into the living quarters for female employees, children, and their nannies. Today, it's a focal point of paranormal activity filled with tales of ghostly children and spectral cowboys. Yeehaw. Guests frequently report the sound of children running up and down the hallway, laughing, giggling, and playing late into the night. Obviously, they don't have a bedtime. Even when there's no children who are booked on that floor. So, obviously, these people are, like, calling down to the front desk and, like, there's children running around. They're running around. Blah, blah, blah.
These darn kids.
And there ain't no kids on that floor.
There's actually no kids on that floor.
No kids on that floor. Those are the ghosts. So, You booked a ghosted floor. Closet doors open and close on their own. The lights flicker for no apparent reason. Some visitors have gone so far as to leave lollipops for the spirits.
Love.
Only to find the mysterious suites relocated to high shelves or hidden nooks by morning. Well out of the reach of any living children. So they may not be able to eat it. But they ain't gonna let no living kid have it. Mm-hmm.
If I can't have it, no one can.
My lollipop. Unless they're kind of like the ghosts from Harry Potter, where they eat all the rotten food.
Yeah.
I don't even think they eat it. I think I don't know. Isn't it down there so they can like it's so rotted that they can almost taste it? I don't know.
Beats me.
While reports often carry a playful tone, not all who spend the night on that floor feel at ease. It's these very hauntings that the Grady twins from The Shining, King's ghostly vision of symmetry and horror were inspired.
Okay, yeah, like The Shining twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where they come from, floor 4.
Makes sense, actually. I probably should have guessed that when you started talking about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The resemblance is uncanny, especially considering the hotel's history and the persistent sightings of spectral children in period attire. Interestingly, despite these frequent reports, hotel records show no deaths of children in the building's history.
It's interesting.
I think it's all that limestone.
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. for sure. I also find it so funny, because, like, the Shining Twins, like, that was a really popular Halloween costume, like, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but, like, everybody dress up as that, like, 2 years ago.
It's so wild how they do it. Mm-hmm. I feel like the costumes just come and go, though.
Yeah.
And, I mean...
There's, like, an influx of...
Yeah. What it's gonna be.
Yeah.
Jeez, you have coffee and you're tired.
I know.
Jeez.
It's literally 9 o'clock at night and I'm drinking a coffee and I'm still yawning.
I know. Tell me about it. At least I don't have to be up at work for 4 a.m. tomorrow.
That's nice.
It is Saturday. So. Room 407 is home to a far more menacing entity. An irate Irishman known by some as Lord Dunraven.
Isn't he the guy that bought the land originally?
He's the guy.
The hotel?
He's the guy who Stanley bought the land from.
Yeah.
Yep.
The irate Irishman.
The irate Irishman.
Got it. Yeah, I recall.
He's believed to be the lingering spirit of the 4th Earl of Dunraven, an unpopular Irish aristocrat and land baron who once owned large swaths of Estes Park. The ghost is anything but friendly. And guests have reported lights flickering without cause, objects being moved, and an oppressive presence watching silently from the corner or the closet of the room. I've seen that he's big time in the closet. Like, guests will open the door, especially if, like, female guests will open the closet door, and they just feel like they're being stared at.
Fun.
Mm-hmm. That's your room, Emma, if we go.
That's where I have to stay.
Some have even claimed to have felt that their hair was tugged while laying in bed. Whether or not Lord Dunraven ever even stayed in a hotel is unclear, but his name and presence loom large in room 407. Now in room 428, this is like the flip side of the coin. Guests here often report the sounds of footsteps and furniture moving about when there's no one else present. No one else present, not president. But the true resident spirit is a friendly cowboy, believed to be the ghost of the legendary outlaw Jim Rocky Mountain Nugent. With half his face disfigured in a grizzly bear fight, Nugent was a fearsome figure in Colorado's early frontier days and a staunch opponent of Lord Dunraven's land claims. He was shot in the head during a land dispute, and he died months later with the bullet still lodged in his skull. His apparition now appears at the foot of the bed, particularly to female guests, some who have even reported waking to the sensation of a ghostly kiss.
Absolutely not. No.
407 or 428?
The one where I'm not going to get awoken by a ghostly kiss, I'll tell you that.
So, there's no official record of a cowboy dying in the hotel.
You know, maybe they just didn't want it to be, like, a bad look on the hotel, and that's why none of these deaths are reported.
Maybe. They're like,
I don't want... This is gonna drive our... What's the word I'm looking for? Our influx? No. Mm.
Like, our ratings?
Yeah. It's gonna kill our ratings.
Mm-hmm. They're gonna get it... They're really gonna get to us on Yelp.
Yelp.
Maybe. I mean, it could be, but it could also not be. Like, it could also be one of those things, like, there's just nothing. It has to do with the limestone and running water and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just all these energies keep finding their way here. There's a way here for entities and stuff to find. We'll go into that. Those familiar with Estes Park's history are convinced that Rocky Mountain Jim's spirit has returned to haunt the place that he called home. The lingering energy on the 4th floor isn't always so clearly defined. In one documented case, a 4-year-old girl staying in one of the guest rooms told her mother the next morning that the little boy had tickled her during the night, but stopped when she asked him to.
No. I mean, how nice to stop, but, like, still.
He listened. He was just trying to have a good time.
That's scary.
Just trying to have fun.
I don't like it. Children? Archie doesn't like it either.
Archie doesn't like anything. He's afraid of his own shadow. Children are known to have active imaginations, but paired with the sheer volume of eerily similar accounts, It's difficult to brush off these stories as more than just coincidences.
I agree.
The Stanley Hotel is a place where the past bleeds to the present. Spirits like Lord Dunraven and Rocky Mountain Jim seem to have found their way back to Estes Park through what some psychics call a vortex on the property. While playful and sometimes unnerving, ghost children and spectral cowboys keep guests on the fourth floor in a constant state of wonder and unease.
Well, yeah.
We'll get into the vortex. But before then, we're going to walk on into the concert hall. It's located just to the right of the main lobby and was built in the style of the Grand Boston Symphony Hall. Originally a sanctuary of elegant music and community, it has since become one of the most haunted locations among the Stanley's 11 buildings. Today, it's the place where the presence of the most famous ghost, Lucy, is felt. By the 1970s, the hotel was in decline, riddled with structural issues and teetering on the edge of financial ruin. And in 1974, the same year Stephen King famously stayed in room 217, Frank Nomaly purchased the property and took temporary steps towards its preservation. He established the Stanley Historic District in 1977 to protect the hotel and its surrounding structures, including the concert hall. Still, it wasn't enough. The Stanley remained at the mercy of seasonal tourism, a pattern that made consistent income difficult and contributed to the hotel's repeated near demise. I mean, it's definitely hard.
Yeah.
Like especially up there.
Right.
I feel like they get crazy snow.
So much snow. I mean,
people from Colorado are probably used to it.
Yeah, but if you're, like, if you're there and you're using that, like, to get away from, like, how peaceful is...
If you're a tourist, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, by 1995, the concert hall had fallen into such disrepair that there was a gaping hole in the ceiling, large enough to see the open sky from the inside.
Dang.
It was during this bleak period that Lucy's story began. Lucy was a young girl of unknown origins. She just found her way here. Not only did she find her way here, but she found her way into the abandoned concert hall while the hotel was once again up for sale. Now, accounts vary, but many believe that she lived alone in the decaying building, seeking shelter and safety among the ruins. Her larger story remains shrouded in mystery. What is agreed upon is that she was discovered after John Cullen bought the property for $3.1 million in 1996 and began renovations. Forced out of the home she knew, Lucy reportedly froze to death, a chilling fate that echoes The Shining's Jack Torrance in The Hedge Maze. Now, Lucy's spirit is highly active, particularly in the room where she once slept within the concert hall. So, guests on the ghost tours, staff members, and solo explorers have all reported seeing the door to her room creak open and then shut by itself. These occurrences are often accompanied by the unmistakable sound of a woman's whisper, disembodied and chilling, turning excitement into fear with a single breath. The very air in the hall is said to feel very heavy, cold, and electric. Lucy also takes part in the hotel's popular ghost hunts, where she's been known to manipulate flashlights on command, turning them on and off in responses to yes or no questions. One of the most well-known pieces of evidence of her existence is the photograph displayed in the hotel lobby taken by a guest. In the reflection behind the guest is a faint, ghastly figure of a young woman, believed by many to be Lucy herself. Further adding to her legacy is a widely shared story from a ghost tour in which the guest snapped a photo of a young girl in a hot pink dress standing in the hallway. Strangely, no one on the tour was wearing that color, and no such girl had been seen by anyone in the group at that time. The vivid image remains unexplained, haunting testament to Lucy's lingering presence.
That's spooky.
Mm-hmm. This place just draws in ghosts.
Yeah.
One of the other intriguing and lesser-known legends tied to the Stanley Hotel is that of the ghostly bartender. While The Shining gave us the chilling character of Lloyd, the ever-smiling bartender who serves Jack Torrance in the Overlook Hotel's haunted ballroom, the real Stanley Hotel has its own spectral bar stories to match. It's commonly believed that Stephen King, during his one-night stay at the nearly empty Stanley Hotel in the 70s, was served drinks by a real bartender at the hotel's real bar. According to multiple sources, this bartender not only served King, but also served him with eerie ghost stories about the hotel's haunted past. These tales, paired with King's dream that night about his son being chased through the halls, reportedly helped spark the idea for The Shining. Alongside the bartender, there are stories of Gilbert, a former janitor. He worked at Stanley for years. Gilbert is said to have been kind and delicate, and after his death, many believed that he returned to the hotel. Guests and employees report hearing footsteps in empty hallways, feeling cold drafts in closed spaces, and seeing shadowy figures, especially after hours. Sorry. Some say he...
I hit my ring on my computer, sorry.
You're fine. Some say he checks on employees as they clean up late into the night, especially around the bar and the kitchen areas.
He's just a dedicated man who liked his job.
Yeah, he just enjoyed it.
He just wants to stick around.
He just wants to hang out.
He's not bothering anybody.
Current bartenders at the Stanley often acknowledge the strange energy lingering in the bar area. Several have shared stories of glasses moving on their own, lights flickering without cause, and even hearing voices when the room is empty. While they might differ on which ghost is responsible, many agree that closing the bar alone, you're never truly alone at the hotel.
See, I don't know if that would give me, like, if that would scare me, or if it would give me, like, a sense of, like, peace that I'm not alone.
I'd probably just talk to them.
Right, as long as it's, as long as it's, what was his name? Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's him, fine. He seems nice.
Once I'd get used to them, I'd talk to them all.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Now, before refrigeration became common, the Stanley used a separate outbuilding to store massive blocks of ice. Today, that space has been converted into a museum showcasing the original Stanley steamer car. But the ice house has a haunted history of its own.
Of course it does.
Why? I mean, at this point, what doesn't?
Right.
Two spirits are believed to reside here, including a man with a bushy beard and white hair, and a shy young boy named Billy, who often appears as a blurry figure in photographs when taken by guests. Not all of Stanley's spirits, though, are shy or subtle. Paul, a former hotel worker, who is known for his strict adherence to the rules, especially curfew, is said to still roam the halls, making sure guests don't stray out of the lines. Most often encountered near the guest corridors late at night, Paul's presence is marked by a firm voice that has been heard saying, "Get out."
And you want to know what I would do? I would listen. I would get out.
Now it's...
I'm not questioning that. Absolutely, whatever you say.
It's not one of those creepy, like...
Yeah.
It's more of like a get out. Like, you gotta go. You stayed too long.
And you want to know what? Like I just said, my point still stands. I'm friggin' listening.
Oh, yeah, you just listen.
Whatever you say.
Yep, whatever you want, my guy. Some guests have reported being physically nudged or pushed toward their rooms, particularly after wandering after hours. Others describe doors mysteriously swinging open or shutting with force, as if Paul is still trying to maintain order.
He's a strict man. He said, get where you're supposed to be. This is past curfew.
Mm-hmm. Now, long before Stephen King imagined a cursed burial ground in Pet Cemetery, the Stanley Hotel already had its own.
Hmm.
On the edge of the property lies a real pet cemetery.
Oh, no way.
The final resting place of several beloved animals. Two of them, which come back and keep attacking guests. You weren't surprised?
I thought you were just going off script. I was like, wait a minute, what?
No. They don't attack guests.
I was like, wait a minute.
Two of them, Cassie, a golden retriever, and Comanche, a fluffy white cat, have been spotted wandering the grounds. Guests and staff alike have reported hearing the jingling of tags, phantom barks, and the sensation of fur brushing against their legs.
See, I love a good animal ghost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, beneath the hotel lies a series of limestone and quartz-filled caves, which some believe act as conduits for the paranormal energy.
I wonder why some believe that. It's mm-hmm. almost as if, like...
Yeah. Now, these tunnels were once used by the employees to navigate the hotel discreetly, and some say one former worker just decided to stay.
Never left.
Nope. A lingering sense of home-baked pastries has been reported with no one in sight.
Love that.
Possibly the ghost of an early 1900s pastry chef.
Shit, if I was going to have a ghost in my house, let it be the ghost of an early 1900s pastry chef.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you fill my house with baked good smells.
Seriously. Although, then I'd literally be craving baked goods 24/7.
Yeah, then that's the downside. There's also the eerie presence of a gray cat with glowing green eyes.
It's Luna. It's literally my cat.
Well, you should go get her. She's obviously in Colorado.
She's literally hanging out in there.
It is oftenly spotted silently stalking in the tunnels. No one knows where it came from, but it doesn't seem to be one of the pets from the cemetery.
Interesting. Right? She's just hanging out.
I guess nobody's ever touched her. She could be real.
Right. What? That's funny. Did they ever specify that it was a ghost cat? Nope.
You just assume it's a ghost cat.
The presence of a gray cat. Maybe it's our little cat from our logo.
No, that's Pierre.
Yeah. He's Pierre. Black.
And he's black.
He's black, not gray. It's Luna.
Yeah. Now, installed in 2015 as homage to Stanley Kubrick's film adaptation of The Shining, the hedge maze was selected from over 300 design submissions. While it wasn't a part of the original hotel grounds, guests have reported feeling disoriented, short of breath, or even panicked while inside, despite no known spirits being attached to the maze itself. What's kind of funny is that this hedge maze is 3 feet tall.
But...
Yeah, in the movie it's like 15 feet tall. Mm-hmm. In real life it's 3 feet tall.
Okay, that's way less intimidating, I fear.
In King's novel, this area would be filled with ominous toparee animals that move when no one was looking. The film traded those for a claustrophobic, tension-filled labyrinth, and the Stanley now has its own. To celebrate 20 years of the hotel ownership in 2015, John W. Cullen, the Stanley's current owner, agreed to build the visitors of the historic hotel their very own hedge labyrinth.
I don't like it.
Like I said, it's only 3 feet tall.
Yeah, but like looking at it from like above, like imagine if it was like higher than that. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Saltburn?
No.
Okay. There's literally like a huge maze in Saltburn, and that's literally like what it reminds me of.
I hate the corn mazes.
Yeah.
They're always sketchy.
Yeah. We got lost in a corn maze once in Lynn Villa.
Yeah?
Yeah, we did.
Did they give you the flag?
We did. Like, as in we. Yes.
Me and you?
Yes. I was young. I was really young. Don't even try to tell me that I'm wrong. There's literally pictures of us in Lynn Villa.
There's probably a high probability I threw the flag that we were supposed to use to...
Very much so. It was literally... Yeah, very much.
Because we would just take them and act like they're spears, and we would just try and throw them through the corn.
Yeah, it was me, you, and Kev. Yeah.
Oh, we definitely lost that flag.
1,010%.
Definitely lost that flag. Boy, Kevin and I would get in the mischief.
Yep.
So, we're going to jump back to room 407.
We're going back.
Because not only is Dunraven in there, there's also said to be a kind and considerate spirit.
Love.
One young guest staying there reported that each time he kept kicking his covers off at night, someone or something would gently tuck him back in. No ghosts have ever been visually identified in that room, but its actions suggest a comforting, almost parental presence.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're going to get one or the other.
Right.
You're either going to get Dunraven or you're going to get this nice guy.
Yeah. I hope for everybody's sake that you get the nice one.
Mm-hmm. Now in room 413, guests have described seeing a man in an old-fashioned suit sitting silently in a corner. His style is clearly from another time.
Mm.
Others have reported a mysterious blue orb floating outside the room with the image of a man's face inside it. Whatever his origins, he makes it very clear that you're on his turf. Kind of gives you that what?
Yeah.
For those who are drawn to the paranormal, the Stanley Hotel has become a mecca of modern-day ghost hunting. Visitors from around the globe flock Estes Park, not just for the beauty of the Rockies or for the Stephen King legacy, but for the chance to experience genuine spine-tingling phenomena. To meet this demand, the hotel offers a range of themed tours that explore its haunted history and supernatural hotspots. Among the most popular are the Stanley Night Tour, the Shining Tour, and the quirky but chilling Frozen Dead Guy Tour, each offering a unique peek behind the veil.
I want to do the Frozen Dead Guy Tour.
That sounds fun. Right away, that drew me in.
Right.
But perhaps no feature of the hotel sparked as much curiosity and speculation as the Vortex. Located at the grand staircase that connects the main lobby to the second floor suites, the Vortex is considered by many, especially psychic mediums and paranormal investigators, to be a swirling paranormal portal. A tunnel of spiritual energy, the staircase is believed to be a supernatural artery that allows spirits to move between realms, which could explain why so many ghost sightings occur throughout the hotel.
100%.
Also, our lights just flickered.
I didn't notice.
Oh, they flickered.
Stop it. I literally didn't notice.
Yeah, they flickered.
Oh, my God.
It isn't just spiritually sensitive who believe in the Vortex power. Guests and hotel staff alike have reported experiencing an eerie shift in the atmosphere while standing on or near their staircase. Cold spots, tingling sensations, and even feelings of being watched are common, with many describing the area as heavy or charged, especially at night. One of the most compelling pieces of evidence supporting the Vortex's reputation came from a photograph taken by a guest, which clearly shows a figure of a young girl standing on the stairs. Mm-hmm. No children were reportedly on the tour at the time, and the image was so clear and unsettling that it gained national media attention. Paranormal enthusiasts continue to cite the image as some of the strongest visual proof of the supernatural ever captured at the Stanley. The photo has become a viral sensation in the ghost hunting communities. Beyond the staircase, eerie experiences are shared across all corners of the hotel and even nearby businesses. A Reddit user named GratefulP73 recounted two chilling encounters in a post that quickly gained traction among the Stanley's many followers. This is, quote, "I've had two experiences there. First, my wife and I spent the night in the Dunraven room, and at one point, around 4 a.m., someone was absolutely walking in that room. It stopped after a few steps. I was too freaked out to get back to sleep and big spooned my wife, too afraid to turn around until the sun started coming up. The second time was in the bathroom in the post, the brewery next door. Both faucets had turned on full blast when I was standing by the door." These types of first-hand accounts have made the Stanley not just a historical site or literary landmark, but a living, breathing paranormal ecosystem with tales and footage still emerging regularly.
This picture
is crazy.
I'm going to need to, yeah, this needs to be posted on the Instagram because you people need to see the way, like, I scrolled down a little bit and, like, saw this before you were even done speaking.
Mm-hmm.
That is, how do you explain that?
You can't.
How do you explain that?
You can't.
Absolutely not.
You just can't. So Stephen King's The Shining, Stanley Kubrick's film adaptation, and the real-life Stanley Hotel that inspired them all are terrifying in their own ways. But there are three very different experiences. With the book, King's 1977 novel follows Jack Torrance, a struggling writer and recovering alcoholic, as he takes a winter job as caretaker of the Overlook Hotel. The hotel is haunted, and its malevolent presence slowly consumes Jack's mind. Danny, Jack's son, possesses The Shining, a psychic ability that allows him to see ghosts and premonitions. The famous book-only elements. Topiary? I don't think I can say that word.
Hedge animals. It's a weird word.
It is. That come to life and stalk the characters. A boiler that ultimately destroys the hotel when Jack forgets to release the pressure. A possessed fire hose that chases Danny through the long empty halls. A more redemptive ending. Jack resists the hotel's influence just long enough to save Danny. Now, in the movies, I guess adaptation, the film strips much of the emotional depth and replaced it with haunting visuals and surreal terror. Famous film-only elements are the Grady twins, identical ghost twins who say, come play with us, that are not in the book. Only one child, a son, exists in the original story.
See, that's what I mean by I've never seen the movie, but, like, I know the story. Like, I know that's what the girls say. Yeah. Like, I know about the girls. That's,
like, the girls are, like, I feel like they're big famous.
Dude,
like,
I can see them standing in their little dresses. Like. Yeah.
The blood-filled elevator, an iconic shot never mentioned in the novel.
Yeah.
The hedge maze, which
was interesting. I didn't know that the elevator scene isn't in the book. Because that's another one that, like, I know that scene.
Yeah. The hedge mage, which replaced the animals that follow the people and becomes the film's climactic ending. An ambiguous looping timeline suggesting that Jack has always been the caretaker. King famously disliked Kubrick's film, calling it emotionally cold and criticizing its portrayal of Jack and Wendy Torrance. Additionally, despite many people's beliefs, the movie was not shot at the Stanley Hotel. It was filmed primarily in England and L Street Studios, with exterior shots of the Overlook Hotel being filmed at the Timberline Lodge in Oregon. The Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, inspired The Shining after Stephen King stayed in room 217 in 1974. He and his wife were the only guests in the nearly empty hotel, and the eerie silence combined with a nightmare about his son sparked the idea for the book. But the real Stanley had no animal hedge maze, no twin girls, no naked woman rotting in a bathtub, no blood-spewing elevators. Despite that, history asserts that many ghosts that reside at this hotel. So much so that the hotel offers daily ghost tours, and has a reputation as one of the most haunted hotels in America. Now, before we get to our big ending and wrap, we all told you about our new team member, Samantha. Don't forget to go check out her website and her podcast, Scare Me Sam. But she has her own experience of the Stanley Hotel.
Oh, that's fun.
So, we're going to get into that right now. Now, it all starts in the summer of 1999, My mom and her then boyfriend took a trip to Colorado. A few other people were in the our group, but they're not important to the story. Psh, get out the way. My mom and I have always been big horror movie buffs, but I hadn't seen The Shining or read the book because it was a bit out of my age range. Still, my mom arranged for us to visit the hotel because she was familiar with the movie. I knew next to nothing about the lore. What I was first going to tell you, that I merely snuck into one of their famous nighttime ghost tours, which my mom completely denied I could be a part of. I waited until they went to sleep, and then I snuck off downstairs as the group was just starting the tour. Way to go, Sam. Being little, I simply blended into the back of the group, and everyone just assumed I was a child of someone else. It lasted for about 15 minutes before someone realized that I was not part of their paid group. They called my mom's room, and she came down in her BJs and yelled at me the entire way back up to our room.
Oh, I'm sure she was pissed.
I went to bed and remember waking up a few hours later feeling so cold. Now, the hotel did not have AC. It still does not have AC, as the temperatures in the area rarely require air conditioning. Still, I was freezing. I remember waking up and complaining to my mom that I was cold and asking her to turn up the heat. It was still dark, so I couldn't see her face. I was about 15 feet from her, sleeping on a pull-out couch, while she slipped into the bed. However, I remember her telling me that the heater was already on full blast, so she gave me another blanket and scolded me to go back to sleep. By then, she was fed up with me. So, as an adult now, with 2 kids of my own, I can understand her shortness. The last thing I remember before burrowing down beneath the large comforter and hearing my mom say something about her being cold, too. It's fuzzy, but I know that was the sentiment. I spent the last 26 years going back and forth on what exactly was whispered and wondering if it was my mom. What has always troubled me was this. First, my mom was hot because she was sleeping right next to the heater. She had already been complaining about her hot flashes and refused to turn up the heat anymore because she said she wasn't cold at all. Secondly, my mom was fed up with my antics. She just about lost her shit when I woke her up for the second time that night asking for a blanket after she had already given me about 4 to make a fort with the couch. It's never sat right with me that the voice I heard whispered about it always being cold and about how concerned it sounded, almost like it was apologizing for the temperature in the room as if it was its fault. So that was initially the story I was going to share with you when I first heard you were doing an episode on the Stanley Hotel. I've never done in-depth research on the topic, apart from knowing the difference between the movie and the book it inspired. I've never researched any of the spirits. It was after my research when I learned about Lucy that I now have an entirely different outlook on what might have happened in that room. It was cold, an unbearable cold, and I had just gotten caught joining a group touring the hotel, one that I shouldn't have been a part of. Then I was kicked out.
Yeah, that is crazy that, like, that happened to her after she got kicked, and, like, that she didn't even, like, think about that until after she did this research and for you.
Lucy gets kicked out of the... Where was she at?
The hall? Was she in...
Yeah, I think it was, like, the concert hall. Yeah. She gets kicked out of there and then ends up freezing to death. And then Sam gets kicked out.
Freezing in that room. That's crazy.
Wild. Mind-blowing. Like...
Yeah, that's absolutely
what
insane.
A way to end the episode.
Seriously.
I can't believe it. That was awesome. We appreciate you sharing that with us, Sam.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything else. It's been a very long night. Appreciate you guys all listening.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Don't forget to comment, like us, follow us on our social medias at...
The Ominous Archives.
And... if you have any stories of your own that you want to share with us, email us at
ominousarchives@gmail.com.
Don't forget to come back next week as we dive into more strange and haunted stories in the Ominous Archives. See ya.